Now turn to part two. You'll hear a student called Duncan Heap talking about his recent trip to Iceland to study seabirds called puffins. For questions 9 to 18, complete the sentences with a word or short phrase. You now have 45 seconds to look at part two.
Do you like seabirds? If so, you'll love puffins. They spend most of their lives at sea, but last August I was lucky enough to see them up close when I visited the Westman Islands in Iceland where they build their nests. First of all, though, a few facts about puffins. They have a squat black and white body, short wings, and a large colourful beak, which I think makes them look really funny on dry land. But puffins are built more to swim underwater than to fly or walk. When you see them swimming, it's an impressive sight. Their wings help them propel themselves through the water. I didn't expect their feet to be used when they were flying, except perhaps just to moderate their speed like brakes. But actually, they use them to alter their direction in the air. In the water, puffins can dive deep, holding their breath for up to 2 minutes to catch fish. When spring comes, puffins can be seen on high cliffs on the Westman Islands making their nests. It's quite a sight, I'm told. I wasn't aware of this, but puffins nest underground rather than on cliff-top ledges as I'd imagined. They dig holes, so their nests are very well protected. Each female puffin lays just one egg in its nest each year, which the pair watches over for 6 weeks, day and night. While they wait, you can hear them underground making noises that might be like talking, loud growling calls, almost like laughter, which some describe as sounding like a cow, and I tend to agree. Young puffins, though, once hatched, sound more like a duck or a goose, peeping for food from their parents. I was told that, as winter beckons, their parents leave them behind and fly off to sea. But apparently it's hunger, rather than loneliness, that makes young puffins fly from their nests. That's something I didn't expect. And this is what I saw when I was there. In the daytime, I watched young puffins diving off the cliffs to gain enough speed for flight as they headed out to sea. At nighttime, though, which is when most of them fly off, it was a different story. The thing is, puffins instinctively use the stars for navigation, but the lights of a town can fool them and make them head in the wrong direction, so the young puffins end up landing all over the place. Some puffins land on the beaches, where they are easily rescued. Others aren't so lucky. If it's on the roads, cars aren't so much of a problem, as people know to drive extra slowly at this time of year. But gardens present more of a threat. They're dark and there are lurking cats. So I helped the local teenagers, who were allowed to stay out late, and we roamed around the town with cardboard shoeboxes, rescuing young puffins as we went. I even saw one boy putting a young puffin in an upturned umbrella, which made me laugh. They didn't seem to mind being handled, and it's not unusual for a single teenager to catch 10 birds in one evening. After a night spent as guests of their rescuers, with the box as a temporary bed, we carried the young birds down to the beach and threw them up high. It was a really rewarding experience to see them glide towards the sea and freedom. Sometimes the puffins aren't ready for release, if they've been injured or whatever, in which case they get taken to the local museum, which becomes a sort of puffin hotel for a few days each year. You can buy all sorts of puffin souvenirs on the islands. I took some great photographs of the birds, one of which is now the screensaver on my computer. I've got a puffin mouse mat too. That's really cute. A much better souvenir than a puffin t-shirt or baseball cap. That's the sort of thing most people buy. Anyway, before I go on to the migration...
Now you'll hear part two again.
Do you like seabirds? If so, you'll love puffins. They spend most of their lives at sea, but last August I was lucky enough to see them up close when I visited the Westman Islands in Iceland where they build their nests. First of all, though, a few facts about puffins. They have a squat black and white body, short wings, and a large colourful beak, which I think makes them look really funny on dry land. But puffins are built more to swim underwater than to fly or walk. When you see them swimming, it's an impressive sight. Their wings help them propel themselves through the water. I didn't expect their feet to be used when they were flying, except perhaps just to moderate their speed like brakes. But actually, they use them to alter their direction in the air. In the water, puffins can dive deep, holding their breath for up to 2 minutes to catch fish. When spring comes, puffins can be seen on high cliffs on the Westman Islands making their nests. It's quite a sight, I'm told. I wasn't aware of this, but puffins nest underground rather than on cliff-top ledges as I'd imagined. They dig holes, so their nests are very well protected. Each female puffin lays just one egg in its nest each year, which the pair watches over for 6 weeks, day and night. While they wait, you can hear them underground making noises that might be like talking, loud growling calls, almost like laughter, which some describe as sounding like a cow, and I tend to agree. Young puffins, though, once hatched, sound more like a duck or a goose, peeping for food from their parents. I was told that, as winter beckons, their parents leave them behind and fly off to sea. But apparently it's hunger rather than loneliness that makes young puffins fly from their nests. That's something I didn't expect. And this is what I saw when I was there. In the daytime, I watched young puffins diving off the cliffs to gain enough speed for flight as they headed out to sea. At nighttime, though, which is when most of them fly off, it was a different story. The thing is, puffins instinctively use the stars for navigation, but the lights of a town can fool them and make them head in the wrong direction, so the young puffins end up landing all over the place. Some puffins land on the beaches, where they are easily rescued. Others aren't so lucky. If it's on the roads, cars aren't so much of a problem, as people know to drive extra slowly at this time of year. But gardens present more of a threat. They're dark and there are lurking cats. So I helped the local teenagers, who are allowed to stay out late, and we roamed around the town with cardboard shoeboxes, rescuing young puffins as we went. I even saw one boy putting a young puffin in an upturned umbrella, which made me laugh. They didn't seem to mind being handled, and it's not unusual for a single teenager to catch 10 birds in one evening. After a night spent as guests of their rescuers, with the box as a temporary bed, we carried the young birds down to the beach and threw them up high. It was a really rewarding experience to see them glide towards the sea and freedom. Sometimes the puffins aren't ready for release, if they've been injured or whatever, in which case they get taken to the local museum, which becomes a sort of puffin hotel for a few days each year. You can buy all sorts of puffin souvenirs on the islands. I took some great photographs of the birds, one of which is now the screensaver on my computer. I've got a puffin mouse mat too, that's really cute. A much better souvenir than a puffin t-shirt or baseball cap. That's the sort of thing most people buy. Anyway, before I go on to the migration...
That is the end of part two.